You are now listening to the Two Dads Run podcast, just two dads who run, talking about running and being dads and some other stuff.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Two Dads Run podcast. I am Gray.
This is Kevin.
And we are your co-hosts for today and always, I guess. So
always.
We got an awesome show for you today. Really cool interview with Ian Connor, who is the owner and CEO of The Running Store in Gainesville, Virginia. He's got a really cool background in running, and really looking forward to you guys hearing that. But what's been going on, man? How's everything?
Everything's going well. Work's going well. Family's going well.
Good.
Training is going all right.
Yeah.
Racing as far as the big item that's coming up. Just kind of did a little pivot, so plan on doing a 100-mile race in the Outer Banks, but that is all going to be virtual now.
Mm.
Yeah, so having to do a
so
little.
So not only were you going to run 100 miles, now you're going to run it virtually.
Going to run it virtually. Going to plan out a 5-loop, 20-mile Map My Run where my driveway will be home base.
Nice.
So we are going to set up a
keep
tent.
It local.
Keep it local. So I'll have just So it'll be one where we just again it's kind of just setting it up. What we're gonna end up doing too. One of the things we're gonna do, Gray, is so I this year in participating of the Fuck Cancer Endurance Club. And we're going to be setting up a website so that people can actually donate to,
nice.
For either the mileage that I'll be running or if they like to purchase a T-shirt. But just showing support for anybody that has been affected by cancer, but specifically with the Fuck Cancer Endurance Club. So proceeds will go to them. And then obviously the purchase of the T-shirt. So, you know, in a way, this change to virtual kind of just it really. I'm actually more excited about this virtual piece, man.
That's awesome. Yeah, we're gonna try to. So this was a pretty quick pivot. So we're gonna actually try to put together a little something so that the Two Dads Run podcast can be out there as well. We'll do a little remote spot and and follow along with Kevin as he runs. I would run with you for some of it. Definitely not 100 miles of it. But I've got a race the next day, so I'm not going to be able to partake. I've got my half is the very next day.
Well, you coming out and supporting me on at least one of those loops will be cool enough, man.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, so let's see. The one I'm probably going to need the most is maybe
the one
at 11 p.m. or 3 a.m., one of those.
Yeah, so you
so make that happen. That'd be great.
As we were on our way to the studio tonight, we were talking on the phone and Kevin mentioned wanting to finish in around 30 hours. And I just, you know, 100 miles sounds like a long way. I mean, that's about what I'm running in a month right now. And for you to run that in one fell swoop there in 30, but just 30 hours seems like such a long time.
You know, I'm not thinking,
I'm not trying to get
that
in your head. Yeah. Sorry. I'm not
thinking about 30 hours, because in a way I'm thinking about how am I going to charge my watch when it starts to die. So I already started thinking when I come in for those loops, it's going to be kind of like a NASCAR pit change. Going to maybe refresh the socks, going to have a charger connected to the garage, put my phone on or put my watch on it. And really it's really just to go out there and have some fun. And I guess what I'm looking forward to is just the mental kind of breakthroughs and barriers. I don't know, just dumb stuff, you know, that runners kind of do when they go out and do stupid stuff like that.
Well, all luck to you, buddy. I'll be
But enough about me, though. I mean, yeah, that'll be fun, and it'll be cool to have you out there and us do some of the podcasts. Definitely, I probably will not be speaking at all. But what about your race, though? Tell us about what you got going on.
Still working towards the Cary Greenways Tour Half Marathon. So as of right now, it's still going to be an in-person race, which I'm really excited about. I really hope it stays that way. It is a staggered start. So basically for the half marathon, we can start anywhere from 8 a.m. to 8:30 a.m., which is kind of weird. I don't know how much it's going to affect the true race environment, because hypothetically you could have somebody faster that started behind you. So, I mean, I guess we're just going to have to run balls to the wall the whole time and just hope for the best. So we'll see. Training's been going pretty well, starting to taper a little bit. Did like 6.5 miles today, which is pretty light for me for a Tuesday. And, we'll see. I'm excited.
What running shoes you've picked out of the four? I think five, Kristen, right
dude,
now.
Honestly,
six, I think, is coming in the mail.
No, so I've got a pair of Vaporflies that I've run 13 miles in or so. Really wasn't that impressed. I mean, they're great. It's a great shoe, but we've probably lost
half our listeners, so there's just two people.
Yeah, you can hear everyone changing to a different podcast. But no, I mean, they're a great shoe. I was really kind of underwhelmed. You know how it goes, man. When people hype stuff up so much, it's really hard to live up to that. I have the Saucony Endorphin Speed, which is a phenomenal shoe. Was widely regarded as the best shoe of 2020. I mean, this thing is fantastic. So it's really hard. I also have a pair of Alpha Flies that are sitting in their box still. I was fully intending to send them back, but now I'm kind of, they fit my feet better. So I'm halfway tempted to find a treadmill somewhere and just take them for a run and see which one I like better. I've ordered them both from Running Warehouse, so I could send them back, or I could just sell the Alpha Flies, you know, and get back most, if not all, of my money with only 13 miles. So I don't know, man. We'll see. I don't want to drag this on too long talking about shoes and
running
races and stuff.
People with running problems.
Yeah. So it's either going to be
$300 pair of shoes.
I'm thinking it's either going to be the Alpha or the Vaporfly, or really I'm strongly considering the Endorphin Speed. So we'll see. I just love that shoe and I wear it a lot.
That's awesome. So,
we'll see. Cool. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. Like I said, taper started. So we're only like 10 days out.
Good. Well, cool. So what are you excited about in speaking to our guest today?
Yeah, so this guy is awesome. He has a really cool running background, and you'll hear plenty about it from him. We had a nice like 50-minute conversation, so definitely get comfortable. If you're on a run, this is going to be a good podcast, good episode for a long run. We've also got some really awesome guests coming up that I'm really excited about. So really looking forward to sharing all of this with you guys, and hope you enjoy this interview.
Hey everyone, so today we're talking to Ian Connor. Ian's the president and CEO at The Running Store based in Gainesville, Virginia. Ian, tell us a little bit about your stellar running background.
Sure. Well, first thing, thanks for having me. My first podcast. So
all right. Yay. Welcome, Ian.
As famous as I am, I can't believe this is my first one.
Hey, you're a big deal now, buddy.
I'm official. But yeah, seriously. Thanks for having me. Running wise, really started running in junior high in Ohio. We have, now I don't know what it's like where you guys are at, but where I was born and raised in Ohio, in junior high, it was seventh and eighth grade. And we actually had cross country in junior high school. I know. Nice. In Virginia, where I'm at right now, they don't have cross country in junior high here.
Yeah, it's the same here in North Carolina. We don't start until high school.
Okay. And so I had a real, real small school. I mean, I was a cornfield school. I mean, my graduating class was like 72 people.
Wow.
So seventh grade through seventh through 12 was all in one building. And I think it was probably 400 and some people, you know, total. So very, very small school, small division. Everybody knew everybody. So you couldn't hide, and you can imagine in that type of environment that people were already picked to play certain sports.
Oh, I'm sure. Absolutely.
So, yeah, it's who you know, right? So I call it rubbed me the wrong way, and I figured, all right, let's find a sport that's all about me. So I started running in junior high, cross country. And then I did not run track until I was a junior in high school. Found track to be, still do kind of find it to be very, very boring, you know, circle, circle, circle.
Yeah.
Especially as a distance runner, right?
Absolutely.
So picked up track my junior year. Won my first state title as a junior in the 1 mile. And then my senior year, I won the 2 mile and cross country. And then that, so a small school, you know, we were small division, but it kind of got the likes of, you know, a couple universities. So I did the whole recruiting thing, right? Did my visits and thought that was wowing, you know. And my visit to Ohio State was the most memorable because you guys are in my age bracket of knowing who Butch Reynolds is, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so at the time, the 400-meter world record holder. So he was like on my – when I went to visit, he took me to dinner.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, this is awesome, right? So I'm sitting at the dinner table with Butch Reynolds and, you know, a bunch of other people at the time. But that was – one of the wowing things to me. And so I ended up going to Ohio State. I didn't know much about running, truly. I was very naive. If I would have been more researching wise, I probably would have not went to Ohio State because at the time they were like 10th out of Big Ten. So they were not very good.
Well, in our defense, we didn't have all the information at our fingertips like we do now.
Correct. Yeah. Absolutely. So ended up going there. You know, it was a great blessing. It was actually an hour from my parents' house. And so I got to, you know, still see my family.
Sure.
I really chose Ohio State because it was so big. I mean, I came from such a small place. I wanted to go huge, right? So that was a pretty big jump.
Yeah,
there.
That's definitely one from one end of the spectrum to the other. I mean, you had as many kids in your entire high school as Kevin and I had in our graduating classes. So,
yeah.
And I was going to say, for those of our listeners that don't know who Butch Reynolds is, pretty badass. I mean, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Ian, the guy held the world record for the 400 meters for quite some time.
Yeah, I don't know how many years, but it was like, what, 43 seconds?
Something like that. 43.29. Somewhere around there.
Yeah, there we go.
Not that we looked it up or anything.
I mean, obviously I was a distance runner, but still wowed by the fact that, you know, it's a world record holder, right?
Yeah,
they rolled out the red carpet for you, man.
They must have won.
The kid from the cornfield.
Bring him in. It was pretty great in the sense that when I went there, I actually was coached by an Olympian. My first year was Robert Gary is his name, and he was a 96 Olympian in the steeplechase. And so I went there and started getting coached by him. And, you know, he introduced me to the steeplechase, and that's kind of how I got involved into that event.
So you didn't start running steeplechase until college?
Correct. I had, like many people, probably most of the listeners, they were like, what is the steeplechase?
Yeah, I was about to say, we might have to have you tell us.
Why don't you, for our listeners, explain what steeplechase is?
Right. So in college outdoors, you know, there's no 2 mile, right? So it's basically the 3,000-meter steeplechase. So it's 200 meters short of 2 miles, but it's an event in which there are barriers. If you've ever watched a horse steeplechase, right? So they're going over these big wooden beams. That's what gets rolled onto the track for this men's race. So they're about 7 feet long. Unlike hurdles, they do not fall over when you hit them.
Sounds like you might know from experience.
A lot of us have figured that out. So there's four of those, plus the fifth one is a water barrier, as it's called. So you jump up onto it and you propel off of it into, you know, a large water pit. And the water kind of absorbs your shock, you land, and then you're off to the next barrier. But
so that's,
so you've got 3,000 meters
per lap, right?
Yeah, so there's 5 total per lap. You have one water pit and then 4 regular barriers.
So does there have to be a water pit? I mean, yeah, I'm sure this is the barrier of entry for the reason why, like, because we didn't have steeplechase here in high school in North Carolina.
Yeah, I think there's probably only a couple states, I think, that have it in high school. So it's pretty much a college, you know, starting event for most people.
Okay, that makes sense.
Now to be official, you have to have a water, you know, water pit in the race. I'm sure there are ones that have occurred without a water pit, but you know, to be legitimate, it's got to have 1 water barrier per lap.
Okay.
So that you know was an introduction by Robert Gary. You know, he's kind of like, all right, you're tall, you know, you're a strong kid. Let's see what you got. So I thought. I hated track, remember, but it provided this atmosphere in which it broke up that lap after lap.
The monotony of it, yeah.
You could focus on a barrier, you would change your mindset, you would get to the next one, and before you knew it, the race was kind of on the final lap, and it's go time. So that started my freshman year. I took off my freshman year, I think. I ended up getting 2nd at the Big Ten Championships, and a little light bulb kind of went off. I was like, wow, this might be my thing. And then I went to the junior U.S., you know, every 2 years, they've got a kind of a U.S. junior championships. And I was young, so August birthday, so I kind of started a year early. So, you know, I was like 17 when I graduated, I think, when most kids are 18. So I still, as a freshman, I was able to go to the U.S. Juniors, and I got 2nd at the U.S. Juniors, which made the world team. And then I was 7th at the World Junior Championship. And that's when, like, just a different mode came on. Everything switched for me. And then, you know, my trajectory from that point on was just, you know, I was a different person, you know, upstairs. In college, so I got 2nd at, I was 15th at the NCAA cross country the next year. So it's funny, like just that mindset change. You know, I was just this freshman who was getting his butt handed to him as a freshman cross country runner, and then after having that success at World Juniors, I then jumped. You know, I jumped. Lots of people to get 15th. And then I went on and got runner up at NCAA's my junior year and track. And then I've shared with you on email, you know, my senior year, I was in position to win, final water jump, and I clipped it and broke my ankle in the water pit. Sports Illustrated happened to be right there, so that's my claim to fame in Sports Illustrated. Well,
I didn't know you broke your ankle. I don't think you shared that with me.
Sorry.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so it's unfortunate that podcasting is not a visual medium because this picture is fantastic. And when you sent it to me, my response was that, you know, I really hope you have this bad boy framed in your house somewhere.
Yeah.
It's just one of those you got to keep for, you know, for all time there.
Sure. Yeah. And it, like I told you, it is framed. Not the way you want to be in Sports Illustrated, but
hey, that's you know, more appearances than most of us will ever make in Sports Illustrated.
I'll tell you though, back in 2001, because when we were looking at this, I remember that photo in the NCAAs in 2001 of that fall. And it was unfortunate, but to what Gray was saying and what I'm just finding out. So you actually severely hurt your ankle then on that. Did you end up finishing, or what ended up, how did the race finish for you?
Yeah. So I got up, you know, adrenaline, obviously, I smashed into the ground. Bounced up and then took 1 step, and I knew obviously there was something definitely wrong. I did finish. You know, it was the hobble hobble crawl over the final barrier, because there's one more, you know, land barrier to go. And I got the pity clap, you know, got the standing clap from everybody in the stands as I.
They're going to make myself a Disney movie about you someday, man.
Yeah. So, and, you know, I finished, of course, dead last, and it was shattered. I mean, it was an impressive break. It was basically, think of like landing in your big toe touching your calf, coming back around.
Oh.
We don't know exactly how it occurs. It's weird because we can't find a video, right? So there's like a video of every national championship race except for the fact that the one that I'm in. And
because it's just, steeplechase.
Of course, nobody cares except the steeplechase. Except they care when somebody wipes out. That's when all the crowd gets around the water pit.
So the hurling. Yeah, go ahead.
Nope, I'm good. You go for it.
I was just gonna ask, so your hurdling career after that, how did the trajectory from that fall change afterwards for you?
Yeah. The hardest part, I can admit now that I was not the same runner. My entire college focus was to, you know, win an NCAA title. You know, actually I went back in my notes. And in my running log, you know, the whole goal was position to win, right? So that was the whole goal my senior year. I had the position to win national championship. And I was in position to win. I mean, I was taking the lead right at that water pit with 150 meters to go. And so mentally, I was never the same. Physically, it led to a lot of, like, instabilities. I mean, of course, I was young and stubborn, so, you know, as soon as the break healed, I quickly jumped back into running, right? I didn't do all the proper PT. Oh, yeah. I didn't do any of that. I just started running, and I started running hard, and it was just kind of like one thing after another. I did the steeple, like, maybe the next year a little bit, but it was kind of a disaster. And then I developed this really bad hip pain, and nobody could figure it out. You know, at the time I went to, you know, I started running for Nike, and even they didn't even have anybody at the time that could figure out what was going on. So it just kind of led to the bad things, you know, and that's kind of how it played out. I mean, I had a couple flashes in the pan of like kind of the old me. I mean, I ran 3:58 in the mile in 2003. I made a couple world cross country teams in the 4K, but it just wasn't me, you know. It was just, I was kind of going through the motions, and I just could never kind of recover at that point.
I think that's important to note. So after the fall and everything that, how, you know, again, how that changed you physically and then mentally, but you were still able to come back and do a 3:58 mile, a sub, you were part of that sub-4 club, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And 250, this is memory, 255th all time?
I think that might be right.
Okay. I mean, but that's badass. So before you go on, because what I'm interested in hearing more about, you know, how did you do that? I mean, you mentioned earlier that after that fall and, you know, in finishing last, especially the caliber that you were, that can mess with your psyche a little bit. But what got you kind of just focused to get back to just flat course and, you know, I'm gonna kill it in some shape or form, and if it's gonna be the mile, I'm gonna do it. So what was your mindset heading into something like a 3:58 sub-4 minute mile after a crash like that?
Yeah, so after the things started to kind of heal, you know, and I was cranking out. I was still at Ohio State at the time, and I still had some really good training partners. My training partners was my roommate at the time. His name was Rob Myers. He went on to run, probably like 3:52, I think. So he was fantastic. So, I mean, we kind of just both committed to the mile, and, it was an interesting synergy we had, because we met in the mile, but anything in training, like over 600 meters, I owned him. Anything under 600 meters, you know, he owned me, right? So we were the best training partners going back and forth. And what's really interesting is the day that I ran 358, he also ran 358 at a different indoor track meet.
Wow.
So, because he was still college eligible, so I had graduated. He was a year or two younger than me. So I had ventured up to Notre Dame to do a mile there, and he had an Ohio State Invitational somewhere that he was running. And so he ran 358 too. But I just kind of put everything, you know, to the side as far as steeple thoughts. And I was like, all right, let's go flatland. And I had a great training partner. So we just kept cranking. And in 358, I think, you know, had I stayed healthy, I still believe I was a 350 low guy. I remember in that race, I actually took the lead with 600 meters to go. In this race, there were there was two super studs. One of them, if you ever look up running, Nick Willis, he's made the Olympic team. He was actually in that race. We all ran 357 high to 358. There was five of us right there in a pack coming through the finish line. But the 600 meters to go, I took the lead, and I was like, and it was this, no. And then I just gave the lead back up because it was, you know, they talk about post-traumatic stress. I still have this issue of not being who I was. So I wasn't confident enough to take the lead and command the lead like I used to be. So I, you know, 358 is still awesome and I'm very proud of that. But, you know, it just wasn't everything I could have been on the flatland track side of things too. But
yeah, and I think you just mentioned the key word there, confidence. I mean, yep. you said earlier, you know, when the light bulb went off for you when you were a freshman, and you know, when you had those outstanding performances, and then all of a sudden you turned and, you know, you transformed into a different runner. It's all about confidence. I mean, I'm sure you would agree with that, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it doesn't matter what level you are, right? If you don't believe in the plan, you know, and have faith in your abilities, then you've done all this work to not get where you want to be or where you're going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. So take us back just a little bit. You were running for Nike. How long were you around with those guys and what was your experience like there?
So graduated in 2001, right? So summer of 2001. And so I started, you know, Nike, obviously if I would have stayed on my feet over the last water jump and, you know, finished that it out, things would have been a little different. You know, I would have gotten, a much more substantial contract and things would have been a little different that way. But so in 2002, basically they were like, you know, we still think you have potential. We're going to wait on this deal see how sounds, you come back.
That sounds like,
you know, game. Yeah, I mean, they are the power, right? So it was kind of that extra, you know, shank in the side. I was like, oh, great, here we go, you know. So that was another motivating factor for me when you asked, like, what did you, you know, how did you get back to it and still run pretty well? It was like, oh, I want a contract, you know, like I want running to be my career at this time. So that kind of motivated me to get back to it and press hard. So I got my contract in 2002. I did a 4-year deal with them. And then after the 4-year deal, I did a 2-year deal. So I was basically from 2002 to 2007, I ran under the swoosh.
Nice.
And while you're doing that, so, you know, also looking back at your running history, Ian, you know, being with Gray and I being here in Raleigh, North Carolina, just a few hours west from us, we have Boone and the Appalachian Mountains. But one of the endurance teams, and I think back then, Zap Fitness is what they are. I believe it's Zap Endurance now, just because we follow them on Instagram, and I love looking at what their training programs look like. But You also joined Zap Fitness team too, correct? Around that time period when you did the sub 4 mile?
That's right. Yeah, so after I can't remember what year I went down there and joined. I don't know if it was 04. I feel like I ran the sub 4 in 03, and I think it was the next year. Like then my hips and things really started to get really ugly, and I remember I didn't really have health care or anything, and I had met one of their athletes at World Cross Country, a team that I was part of, and I remember talking to him, and he was talking about the program he was with, which was Zap Fitness, and he had kind of health care coverage, they covered a lot of additional expenses. It was a good group of just runners that wanted to train hard, so I reached back out to him after 03. And, I got a kind of an invitation to come down there and visit. So I visited. I love the place. I mean, gosh, if you've been, you know what I'm talking about. And if you haven't, you need to go visit. The place is beautiful. Blowing Rock, North Carolina, Lenoir, Boone area. I mean, the focus is training and outdoors. Then you're in love. Because not a lot of other things to do.
But definitely not. If you're
outdoors, it's the place to be. So, yeah, I spent two or probably around 3, maybe 4 years with them as well, training down there.
And so, and around that, was it after Nike? Because again, full disclosure, you and I have spoken before.
Yep.
Was it after that you spent some time in Boone, or was it during around that same time?
So what you mean, while I was with Nike or
living in, because you lived in Boone for a while, correct?
Yeah. So while I was still under Nike, I also was with Zap, right? So you could be a professional athlete, but be part of their, you could have a professional contract and still be training with their group.
Got it.
As an athlete. So I did a little combo there with them, and that took me, with their 3 to 4 years there. And then I stayed there when I kind of stopped, the running gig and went into the working world. But I did live there for like 2 years after stopping running.
Okay, so as we segue from running to the working world, how did the running store in Gainesville come about? What was the path that brought you there?
Sure. So that's an interesting story right there. It's all been interesting, right? This is a good story.
Yeah, great so far.
So when running was coming towards its end, mentally, physically, I coined the term, the whipping boy, but there was blood in the water in training and racing, right? I became the guy that, since I was no longer as good as I once was, people started to beat me that shouldn't have beaten me, if that makes sense, I'm trying to be that and try to say that as nice as I can, but you know, there's a certain group that you're like, why is that guy beating me? That guy should not be beating me, type thing. And enough of that was starting to occur that I was like, okay, enough is enough. Right. Like, so it's even harder on you mentally when you know that your ability is there, but you're just not producing. So when that all got exhausting, I was like, okay, I'm done. But I want to stay in kind of the running, running has been everything to me and given me a lot. So I wanted to stay in the running industry. And I got this contact at Fila Running. So at the time, Fila was making a push for running specialty. So I contacted he was kind of the manager of the sales team. And I thought, well, this could be cool, right? So I would.
What were you doing around this time, though? I'm sorry, Ian. So just to kind of paint the picture. So the running career is kind of winding down. So what are you doing at this transition period before that actually starts to kind of take shape?
Nothing. I mean, okay. I kind of transitioned quickly, though.
Okay.
When running was kind of winding down, we call it road hoeing. It's where You jump on the road circuit and you race for money, right? So I was just racing all kinds of races, traveling around, getting $400 here, you know, $500 there.
Road hoeing.
So
there you go.
Yeah. So as I did that, and basically until I had that contact, and then, you know, it was like it was kind of a seamless transition. I just kind of severed one, started the next one, got that call, had an interview, and before you know it, I was boots on the ground, traveling 1,500 miles a week in my 1991 Subaru wagon, visiting Atlanta, Georgia, all of Tennessee, Virginia, Alabama, North Carolina, South Carolina. I had a huge territory. It was insane. And it was no joke, 1,500 miles a week, and it was my first year of marriage. So you can imagine that didn't go so well.
Was it your last year of marriage? Would have been my last.
Yeah. So you, with that said, I did that for barely, you know, not quite 2 years, because it obviously played a toll on things.
Sure.
So I had this call one. Now, understand, I was Fila, right? Fila was not a very wanted brand. It was very, very difficult to get into running specialty stores. You know, you cold call and you'd be like, hey, this is Ian with Fila. And they'd be like, no. Or they would hit. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I used to come up with, like, just anything to make it fun. I'd be like, hey, Tom, how do you feel? It's Ian, you know?
Like, oh, no. I would have hung up on you too, Ian, in all fairness.
Should have went with Jerry Stackhouse shoes, yes.
I was going to say, unless you were basketball or tennis, I mean, I didn't know Fila even entered the running space at one point.
Oh, it's so funny you say that. In the urban industry, right, like, Fila was king. I don't know. I don't pay attention to that. But so we had this Fila sales meeting, and it was, at the time, they were really big in, they were trying to push for tennis, running, and obviously the urban has always been there. But we were all at this meeting, and all the reps from the area. It was in Atlanta, Georgia. And I remember meeting the Atlanta urban rep. And, you know, of course, he's just way different than me. And he's like, hey, do you wanna ride along?
Show you how it's done.
So I remember getting in this guy's, you know, so remember, I'm driving
like training day
Subaru wagon for my, you know, I've got rust, and my sales car is, you know, a piece. And I get into his sales car, and it's, at the time, it's a brand new Dodge SRT, you know, Cherokee. Remember those things are like 600 horsepower, way cool, right? So, it's got 20-inch rims, and, you know, we get out and we go into his account, and he's, you know, of course, it's not running specialty, man. It's just different, right? So these guys got shoes just piled up on floor, you know, piled up in stacks, and they've got their Fila Urban shoes, and their hello is, you know, a handshake that's like 18 different ways. And I'm like, oh, I, you know, I'm this little skinny white guy, like, hi, I'm Ian, you know. Of course, I didn't break out the how do you feel line, but it was just a different, and then that really hit home. I was like, yeah, I don't know if Fila's going to make it in run specialty. it's just different. It's got its mark in another industry. And but we kept pressing on. Fila kept dumping money into it, and I was, you know, happy to still try to make it, you know, a thing and run specialty. And then as it slowly, as I saw the writing on the wall that it wasn't going to make it, I had this call from an account that was going to open in Virginia. And this guy's like, hey, you know, we're getting ready to open a store, and I would love to carry your brand. And remember, I'm Fila. I'm like jumping for joy. This guy called
me. I'll be there
me.
In 10 minutes.
He wants my stuff. Oh, holler. So I'm like, yeah, whenever your door's open, I'm in, right? Like, let's do it. And so he's like, okay, I'll keep you in the know on when the store opens and the progress, right? Because they were kind of in their infancy, and they were, you know, still working on the design and everything as far as the store. So that was kind of the next month or so. He called me to give me an update, and I told him, I said, hey, I'm pretty sure that when your doors do open, I'm not going to be your rep any longer. I just want to be honest. And he's like, oh, that's unfortunate. So he calls me like the next week, and he's like, well, hey, you know, I've really liked our communication throughout this. Would you consider being my general manager? Because we don't have one. And I was like, no. You know, I was going 1,500 miles a week, kind of living the dream as far as freedom. And this guy wants to put me in, you know, a four wall. Ew, that sounded miserable. So I said, no thanks. And he probably bugged me every week thereafter. I said, come on, Ian, you know, you should come check it out. It's going to be a great store, great location. And he bugged me enough that I said, okay, you know what? I'll come up for a visit. So I drove up. I saw the store at that point that was going to occur. And I was like, yeah, this is great. I mean, I saw the area. I knew that it would be successful. So I agreed to be the opening general manager of the running store when the doors opened, and the side agreement that I would help build it and then it would become mine, because I didn't want to just manage for somebody for the rest of my life, right? So I wanted to, you know, the type A personality, you know, I wanted to get the top of the food chain. I want to own it, right? I'll build it. I want to own it.
So very curious on that, Ian, because I'll tell you that there are definitely a lot of listeners, a lot of our peers that are in that, they're in that phase, and actually they're probably been thinking about doing something like that for a while. So how did you negotiate those types of terms that, hey, I'll accept this position, but on the condition of that I become the CEO and owner of this place down the road? So kind of put the business cap on.
Yeah. So we didn't really have like anything in writing or anything. It was just kind of like a gentleman's nod. He knew it. I knew it. The two majority owners at the time, it was a passion they had. They weren't going to work it, right? So, and I'm still very close, good friends to both of them. But one, you know, was he worked for the county, and then, well, they both worked for the county, I guess, in a way. One was a teacher for, you know, he'd been in the school system for forever, and then the other worked for the, you know, the county, local county government. So both those guys had full-time jobs. They both at the time were high school coaches, so they were never going to be in the store, right? They just had this great idea, and they saw the need for a running store to be in their community. So they opened it up, you know, with me as the general manager. And so they knew they weren't going to work it. And I had a passion to eventually, you know, own it / buy it from them. And that's kind of just how it evolved. Now, you know, I was kind of blessed that they are two really good guys, you know, so if I were to do it again, I'd, you know, probably have something written, because, you know, it's hard to trust people these days, you know, and unfortunately I hate to say that, but, you know, I would definitely write something down. Sweat equity obviously is huge. You know, if you can negotiate something like that. The problem I have looking back on it is I built a great running store and I paid for that. So it was like, oh, you did such a good job. Now you have to pay for that good job. So I wish I would have done a little less of a good job. But I did buy it 5 years in. So, you know, the doors opened November 16th of 07. And, you know, 5 years later, I got, you know, the funds together, and I've owned since.
And that area has exploded since 2007, yeah?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I mean, it is, you know, it's the bedroom community of D.C. You know, it's people moving out. You know, they all work downtown, you know, Arlington, Fairfax, you know, Pentagon type area, and they drive home, you know, and you can get a lot more for your money out in Gainesville, but they all commute, you know, in. So constantly there's, you know, signs up for, you know, 300 home development happening, you know, seems like every couple months there's, you know, 300 homes popping up here or there, which is good.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, cause I lived in Gainesville for a while. Probably 2003, and then just kind of lived in and around the area. My brother still lives there now, and it's just been crazy every time I go back up there to visit, you know, from where it was in 2003, where there was literally almost nothing there, to now it's, you know, it's suburbia.
Yep. Yeah. This used to be farm country, and it's, you know, Mr. Farmer sells his land for, you know, multi-millions of dollars, retires, and then 300 homes get put up.
So, obviously, with the pandemic and all of that, I'm sure that's presented some pretty unique challenges for you in the retail world. How's that been? How have you navigated that? And are you looking forward to the end of this thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think like everyone, we're like, I can't believe it's still, you know, kind of plaguing us here. But luckily, another one of those blessings is we just have one store, right? So, I mean, like, it's much easier to pivot and make changes with one instead of many. And, you know, I'm blessed to have a wife that's a nurse and her skill set highly needed. So as soon as COVID hit, you know, I pulled off payroll to keep the store, you know, cash flow healthy and, you know, above water. So I came home, you know, full-time daddy duty with the little one. And, you know, she was out there, you know, doing her thing as a nurse. And I kept, you know, I didn't let go of anybody. We kept everybody.
Awesome.
I have a pretty awesome staff. And, you know, we're really blessed to have an amazing community, customer base that really supported us, you know, through the whole thing. And still do. I mean, I think I see daylight now, but, you know, our doors are open. We're going to make it. So I'm super blessed again, just to have the customers that we do. I mean, we do have an amazing customer base that continues to support us. I mean, so many people would come in and I knew they didn't need shoes. I mean, they were buying shoes to keep us going. You know, like we made deliveries, you know, we navigated that way. We did everything that you see everybody else doing, whether it's, you know, virtual fittings, you know, I have many phone calls, you know, instant message, Facebook, you name it. People text in, call in, whatever. We would deliver. We stayed open. We never closed the doors, even though there were zeros sometimes. You know, you feel like you should have closed, but
yeah.
We remained open the whole time because there's always something to do, you know, inside the store. But people still came in. You know, we masked up, safe, and everything. But we did pretty good. Obviously, things were, you know, not what they were the year or two before, but, you know, I'm pretty happy with, you know, how the team pulled together and the community to support us.
No, that's great. And, you know, Gray and I, we definitely pray for businesses like yours and businesses all across the country that have been impacted by the pandemic and, you know, in the running community. I think that's been somewhat of the neat thing and the eye-opening thing. So here in the RDU area, the Raleigh-Durham area, there's the Tobacco Trail, and I'll tell you, on the weekends, that trail gets packed and more packed and more packed. So you have more people that are outside that are being more just health conscious and just running. So I understand it's great to hear that you didn't let go of any staff, but as far as sales wise, and you kind of touched a little bit on that, but have you started to see, sales just pick up or maybe just interest from people that, more people in the area that you thought like, wow, I can't believe we're actually now touching more people in the area than before? Or is it just, go ahead.
So there's no doubt that I have witnessed, you know, just the driving around or I kind of live in the country outside of Gainesville, and there's people I see, you know, I've never seen anybody running on any of these old country roads. And I see people, I'm like, that is awesome. Right. I mean, even sometimes when I'm making my trip into Gainesville, there are definitely more people than ever out walking, jogging, biking. It is great to see. I mean, running, so, you know, running events were canceled, but running and walking was never canceled. And it's, you know, it's a pair of shoes, right? I mean, in all reality, it's a pretty cheap, you know, thing to go do. You just take the shoes that you got or go buy, you know, a new pair of shoes and you're out the door and you're de-stressing and it's good for you. So now I talked to Gray about this the other day. It's like, I've seen an uptick now. I've just recently, and you know, it's not like we saw, there were definitely more people exercising and participating, you know, in running and walking last year, But a lot of that, they were just utilizing the shoes that they had in the garage, right? So they were like, I need to get outside. I got a pair of shoes. I'm going to put them on. So I didn't really see them as a customer, but now I'm starting to see them because they're sticking with it and they're realizing, okay, these Walmart shoes might not be the best shoe for me. I've stuck with this. Let me see what else is out there. Right? So I'm starting to see them, you know, come in and having those conversations and getting pumped about, you know, their fitness and their goals that they now have that they
and maybe racing again someday.
Right. Yeah. Or they're going to do their first race. Right. Yeah. So you got the people that are going to race again, or the people that are like, you know what? I just started running last year. I think I might enter a 5K. And you're like, yeah, you know, like that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, so absolutely. We're super excited. Kevin and I both have races coming up. In person, right? Well, mine's in person. His just moved virtual, but mine is still in person for now. So we'll see. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, I think it probably will remain. I think we're starting to see, you know, things open up, and I think we'll see them stick to as far as, you know, whatever they're saying. I think they will, you know, stay open unless something really bad starts happening. You know, vaccines are here and people are starting to feel more comfortable. So it's a good thing.
For sure. So what does the future hold for you, Ian, and the running store?
That's a good question. I mean, obviously I want the running store to remain open and for a long, long, long time. You know, I've always joked, you know, I'd love for my daughter to take it over, you know, at some point. You know, it's a constant, you know, the landscape is changing all the time, right? So, you know, the internet obviously doesn't go away. You know, we talk about the biggest competitor is not another brick and mortar store, right? It's not Dick's Sporting Goods. It's not any other store. It's the internet. So you've got that's never going to go away, right? So you've got this, your biggest competitor that you just know, unfortunately, is not going to die, right? He's a monster and he's going to be there in your dreams all the time. So pivoting around that, making changes to you're constantly trying to be the best that you can be in your doors, right? So that's what matters, is service has to be your best product. So for me, I mean, the goal is constant, staff awareness that guys, and girls, this, you need, when a customer comes in, they're here not to just buy a shoe. They're here to have an experience, right? And if the customer doesn't have an experience in your establishment, they're not coming back, because they'll just go to the internet, right? So it's like, if a customer just comes in and you just show them four pairs of shoes and they choose one, they're not coming back.
But yeah, I think you nailed it. Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, it's a challenge, because as a business owner, I have the skin in the game, right? But trying to get, you know, and again, I have a great team of sales associates, but their skin's not in the game like it is mine, right? So it's hard for them to put on the hat that I wear. But you start to see some light bulbs go off occasionally, right? So just constant, you know, nurturing of that environment inside the store, welcoming everybody. I mean, the area is growing so much, we still have endless amount of people that have never been in our doors. And part of my marketing campaign for the continued future is bringing awareness to people that the running store is not just for the elite runner, right? So we have a great name. The running store is by far the best name, I think, in the industry.
Yeah, it's great. Absolutely.
But a lot of people think that it's only for your runner, right? So I've chased people down literally from the store. Like, I'll have customers come in, they'll look in the store, and then they'll turn around and they'll leave. And like, I'll chase them down. I'll be like, hey, sir, ma'am, you know, what can I do for you today? And, you know, they think that, you know, they've looked around and they're like, it's a bunch of anorexic looking runners, you know? So they're like, I don't feel comfortable in there. I'm like, No, don't worry. We help everyone, right? Like, my customer base is 80, probably maybe even 90% is just your average person who just wants to walk or run, right? That's our best customer. I actually don't even want the elite runner. You know, usually they come in with more knowledge than we have, because all they did is sit on the internet and, you know, read everything.
Yeah.
And by the time they've come in and talked to me, they're only going to break out the gift card that they won in their, you know, they're never going to buy anything from me. I mean, I'm never going to make a dollar from them, because they've won every local 5K in their age group, you know? So
that, I feel attacked, Ian. Kidding. I'm not winning anything.
Don't forget, use your gift card and then add something else on top of it.
Exactly.
But that is the biggest challenge for us, is the name's the best name, but it's also, for a lot of people, pigeonholes us a little bit, because they think it's only for runners, when, again, most of my customer base, I'm fitting the UPS workers, the Home Depot, the Lowe's, hairdressers. I mean, if you've got feet, we're doing it, right? We're putting you in the right shoe. We're analyzing your feet. We're doing 3D mapping, all that stuff, right? So it's if you got feet, we're there for you. So that's the hurdle.
Yeah, absolutely. You nailed it. The experience. Well, Ian, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. It's been awesome talking to you. Where can people, does the running store have a big, you know, online presence? Are you guys deep into social media? Where can people find you?
So by the time this airs, we might have our new, website up, but it's we're therunningstore.com. Currently, there's just kind of a placeholder. We have a new website in development in draft mode, but, you know, it'll just give you information about the running store. My goal was never to, at this time, to have, I'm not going to compete with Roadrunner Sports or Running Warehouse or Amazon, right? So that's not my thing. We're sit and fit. So my goal was just to create a new website that talks about my team and what we do at the running store. We'll, of course, have some running store merchandise for sale, but TheRunningStore.com is our website, and we've got an Instagram page, The Running Store, and then Facebook page. That is The Running Store team, I believe. Yeah.
Awesome. Ian, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Ian.
Awesome conversation. It was really a good time learning about your career and your story.
I'm glad to be on. Thanks for having me.
All right, absolutely. Take care.
All right.